on the dead man's chest. Yo, ho, ho, and a bottle of rum. Ring, and the devil has done with the rest.
You ready?
Yes.
You ready?
Ready.
Well, I'm ready.
This? We're going to do this?
Yeah. We're going to do this. We're going to do this right now.
Now?
Now.
Now. How now, brown cow?
Scotchy, scotch, scotch, scotch.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the second episode of Comaholics Light. That's right. Even when we can't be together doing Comaholics, we're still somehow together using the magic alchemy of the internet, drinking, talking about comic books, covering one series at a time using our light podcast. They're less filling, but they still taste great. Isn't that right, Apocalypse?
We didn't feel like we were picking apart enough comic books, so we decided to add this light version to kind of, you know, squeeze in a few more between the major podcasts.
Give you a reason to drink in the middle of the week.
The full version.
Do you need a reason?
No.
I mean, because, I mean, I'm a man.
Well, we're drinking scotch right now and some Scottish ale. Although I went ahead and clinked my glass again. I'm about to watch that.
We were clinking the phone. Just clink.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a great sound, by the way. That's what everybody wants to hear.
Don't set your drinks there. All right. So, tonight we're going to cover Critical Millennium, The Dark Frontier. I don't know the original publisher was. It's hard to tell with Arcadia. I don't know if Arcadia picked this up. I think they did. I think they picked this up from another label.
If I remember correctly, it was a novel that they adapted.
Right. It's written by Gaska, Andrew E.C. Gaska, and the artist is Daniel DeSalt. I tried to do some reference, a little research on them. The only thing that pulled up on what I did find was that they had done a Planet of the Apes issue.
Okay.
Several issues, Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes, actually just done recently. It's an illustrated novel done just this year, with, I believe, the writer or the artist as well. And also I found interesting was that Chandra Free is involved in the Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes as well. Do you remember her? That was we won't go there, but that was she's the author and the artist for The God Machine that we reviewed not too long ago as well.
Right. So just remember, everybody, you can go back through the archives, listen to the old episodes. It's always good stuff. And right. We did talk a little bit about her on a previous podcast, so go check it out if you haven't. I'm sure you will be entertained.
Yeah, that was my comic book letterbox side note, you know. Like in ASM when they try to reference you to another issue. That was it right there.
Yeah, but which episode of Comaholics was it?
I'm not that good.
Oh, well.
It was a while. Well, it was three or four episodes ago, I think.
Yeah, I want to say it was like maybe episode 12.
Sure.
But, all right, so anyway, let's talk about Critical Millennium.
Right.
What's so critical about it?
To paint this, this takes place in the future. The critical millennium comes from, there's basically a millennium of, economic and, ecological disaster on planet Earth. And basically in this, white people are the minorities. They're called ghosts. Majority of the population is would be like Indian and Chinese, pretty much, are the major population. There's been some major floods, which have nearly wiped out some of the white population colonies. You got to understand, Earth is mostly water at this point. Every ecological disaster you could think of has happened or is gonna happen. It reminds me a lot of, like, Blade Runner and that whole concept of where, like, you know, planet Earth has expounded their colonies on other planets trying to find resources to survive. Meanwhile, the poor and the rest of human society is stuck on Earth. And it's this like whole government conspiracy of, you know, they're denying that, you know, that they've been doing this massive recycling program and somehow it's going to fix the problem. But it's not working at all. The government's totally lying to the people.
What?
Yeah, believe it or not.
What? I find that so hard to believe.
So that's kind of in a nutshell what this world is in Critical Millennium. If I were to describe this to somebody, I would say it is actually kind of like a cross between like a Blade Runner and Brazil. I mean, it's really got this bizarre twist.
So kind of like the 12 Monkeys.
Yes, but not so cryptic. Not so cryptic.
Okay.
The two main characters are Eric, spelled with a Y, and his best friend Tom, T-H-O-M-M, I believe.
Yeah.
And they are old money rich kids, basically. Eric in particular, his dad was like on the verge of creating this this propulsion system that you would use black hole technology to warp drive through space. And somewhere along the way, I think there's a backstory in issue 2 or 3 where Eric actually witnesses his grandmother and parents get killed by the Supreme Chancellor lady, who's basically the president of the world, has served like 4 or 6 terms or something crazy like that.
40-something years?
Yeah, I mean, like, she's just like the supreme ruler of Earth, and she's trying to suppress all of these notions that the government is conspiring to, you know, pacify the people, and actually the world is going to hell. So, Eric gets the idea from one of the scientists who used to befriend his grandfather to spend all of his money to invest in this propulsion system to place a rocket into space and try to see if there's any habitable planets out there for mankind. Now, there's all kinds of twists and turns involved with all this. So you've got this Eric who's, you know, I would say if you were to guess his age, he's probably in his early 20s. Hold on 1 second. Can you continue a thought there on that? What did you think of the main artwork in the first issue?
Oh, I don't know. I guess the artwork was pretty consistent and crisp throughout the first couple episodes that I was looking through. I have to admit, I like the color schemes. They varied it between panels or columns.
What style is the artwork? I mean, does this look like a traditional comic book?
No, it's kind of got that drawn out and painted look.
There's a lot more details in the background of every single image. Like, they really, you know how some comics where they spend a lot of time on the art, they kind of have like a couple layers of detail mm-hmm. that goes back in the scene. Well, this one has, in some scenes, like 5 or 6 layers of depth. I mean, they definitely spent.
But they do it in a way that it looks like they layered frames over each other.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't. That's how they define the depth. You know, the dimensions are. When I say that is, it's like, for example, in this one frame I'm looking at, the two characters are done in what looks like a black and gray silhouette, but with a green glow, and then the character behind them is done in the same effect but purple. Does that make sense?
So, maybe.
Okay. So they use that imagery to try to draw out some of the characters when they're having conversations.
So does most of the story just take place on these ships traveling through space?
No, it's mostly done on Earth in these colonies that are left over on Earth.
Okay.
You've got the ghost colonies, which are basically these gigantic frigate ships that the basically what's left of the white population have taken over. And at this point, they're basically slaves. White people are basically slaves, you know, indentured servants for the other cultures.
In America,
it's no more.
Yeah, it's pretty much something happened to it. Most of it's underwater.
Right.
And it got completely obliterated as part of the apocalypse or the cataclysm that they mentioned that happened in the series.
So, you know, most animal species are dead.
So what type of story is this? I mean, is there a lot? Is there action to it? Is it mostly people sitting around talking? I mean, what?
No. It actually starts out the very first issue. It starts out with the ship. What is it called? The Black Rabbit, right?
The black. Well, it's a class of ship. It had a name, I thought.
Yeah.
I think it's
called the Black Rabbit, which is the ship that they put the hyperdrive on. It starts off with the crew on the ship. That's the very first page. And it shows them deteriorating as they're being launched off into space. And it's almost like you don't know if they're experiencing some kind of crisis because they're going through dimensions or what. But in the first five or six frames of the first page, you see the crew, like, physically deteriorate into, like, this level of insanity where by the third or fourth page, there's one crewman left, and he's absolutely insane.
And they don't really explain what happened to the
rest
the previous
of
crew, of which there are like five or six.
Right.
But they just slowly disappear from, like, literally from scene to scene.
Right. And then in the end, he's like greeted by this like guy almost reminds me like a Giger-esque, you know, monster, super supreme being in the middle of space, like this godlike monster. And then from there, it cuts right into, like, he's, like, having a flashback of his life. And I think looking back on this, I think it's Eric, the main character, who and he's having this flashback of his life. And then it goes right into the second chapter of the whole story where Tom and Eric, what appear to be, it looks like they're, like, hunting rhinos. But actually, they're doing, like, this virtual reality game sitting at a bar. And then that's when there's like this big, he's having his big birthday celebration. His grandparents are dead. He just inherited all this money. And then it goes into.
All right, we'll give like
that, Zoom. That's when he meets a scientist. That's when he meets a scientist who is his grandfather's co-worker, or, you know, they founded the company to begin with. And that's where he gets the idea for the hyperdrive.
Okay. So. Zoom out a little bit. Like, don't give me, like, play-by-play through the issue.
Right.
But the entire series, like, what's... Oh, okay, so they have this hyperdrive.
Well,
is someone trying to kill them for it? Is someone trying to stop them from doing it? I mean...
That's what I was going to get you next. They've got some things in their way. They've got... I forget her name, but the woman that's primarily, like, the supreme Chancellor of Earth is trying to stop the ship from launching into space and giving people hope, basically. And then there's also the terrorists, you know, aka ghosts, the white people, that are trying to infiltrate and destroy the whole process, throughout the whole process, their whole development of trying to invent the hyperdrive to when they go on this, like, big intercolony
exploratory.
It gets really bizarre there. They, like, go on this, like, trip through the solar system. And Eric, he's got all these women, right? So he's, I don't know, I'm trying to
describe. it's literally
bizarre.
But literally, it jumps around that much.
Yeah.
Even in a single comic. It's, like, all over the place. There's, like, eight different things, and you're like, what? And, like, you finally think you get.
Yeah, so I mean,
you finally think you got it, and you got a little bit of contingency, and then it goes to another.
So
scene.
The government and the terrorists are trying to stop them from launching this ship.
Yeah,
so
there's
I understand why the government's trying to stop them, but why are the terrorists trying to stop them?
Well, you find out in the end that actually the terrorists are just patsies of the government. So there you go.
Okay.
Yeah. It's got this, like, farcical style to it. At the very end, like, I mean, there's some bizarre things going on here. And, like, so picture, like really terrible Japanese television, right? So at the very end, when they finally get the ship launched into space and they're taken off, at the same time, the government's got this conspiracy where they're going to drop this satellite that's going to fall from the sky and basically do away with all these minorities on Earth. Okay? So, so at the same time, like, this massive doomsday thing is going to happen. So as they're being launched into space, this is like a television show, And there's like this massive woman. And she's like this big, fat Jabba the Hutt lady. I mean, she's just like disgusting. And then her co-host is like this like TV head guy. He's like this super worked out guy with like a mankini on with like this TV for a head. And they're having this like contest to see if the ship will launch into space. I'm just trying to explain some of the bizarreness of this comic book. So the winner of the two teams that, you know, that they have on in the crowd gets to have sex with the big, fat, ugly, nasty thing. And in the process, she has a heart attack. And the funny thing is one of the audience participants is like, oh, she's dead. Do we still get to have sex with her? You know, it's just like this like really bizarre scene. And then it goes right back into them being launched into space. And, you know, so that's kind of what I'm getting at. Is it's just like these like bizarre cuts.
To me, it sounds a lot like Time Bandits.
It's, well, in a very...
different...
I mean not the storyline necessarily is the same, but if you took, like, you know, that same kind of zany style that it had to it, where at times it could be kind of intense, and at times it was just, you know, your money or your life game show on TV, and just,
right.
You know, there's devil walking around, there's God walking around, you know, that kind of type stuff.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, there's also, like, you know, lots of boobies and sex, and there's even like dolphin slayings.
It's really bizarre.
Like this,
like it's like a series of vignettes of the future.
Right. Well, yeah. Like,
but from page to page, they could be completely different.
There's a scene where like the supreme ruler lady, she's a whatever you call her, the heiress, whatever. She's in the Mid Pacific Rim, like the former Republic of Polynesia, and she's having a meeting with this guy, and they chase in all these dolphins into the shore, and then they just slaughter them all. And it's like a part of this like cultural thing that she has to do. It's just really, really bizarre stuff. And then they must have a hatred towards dolphins, because actually at the end when that big fat lady, she's eating like a dolphin head. Like she gets handed a plate of dolphin. I don't know. It's just really, really weird stuff. But at the same time, I was like drawn to it. I wanted to see like where this went. Here's that the TV head guy and the big fat lady with the she has a heart attack, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed it.
Visually, it was interesting to go from scene to scene, and while it jumped around quite a bit in terms of the topic that they were depicting, and even in the background of the scene, there was always something going on that was sort of superfluous to the story. It just felt like, despite the fact that they were jumping around, each little individual aria or vignette or whatever you want to call it is actually fairly pretty interesting, and you have no idea what's going on in some of them until, you know, at the end it sort of makes sense.
There's a lot of like big tragic events. Like at one point the terrorists long story short, there's like this like tether from Earth going up to this like space station in space, and the terrorists attack this space station up top up in space or in Earth's orbit. And this whole tether comes crashing down on New Bombay. And, you know, so there's, like, all these, like, violent cataclysms and floods and explosions. And
the end of the Earth.
You know, there's a lot of death and espionage between the ghosts and them trying to stop this intergalactic spaceship from happening.
And the violence is pretty graphic. I mean, they definitely don't skimp. When somebody dies, they generally die graphically or very horribly.
And you find out, like, the ghost leader, the head terrorist, Wraith, is actually, like, working for the government. And, you know, he was basically, what do they say? He's, like, dipped in liquid nitrogen and mercurous chloride so that way he would look white. Just, like, all this with this bizarre stuff. So, and, you know, he ended up being the leader of this terrorist cell just to use them as patsies to try to destroy this spaceship from.
So, basically, to make a long story short, this is what you're telling me. It's bizarre. It's a little freaky. A lot of dolphins get killed. There's boobies, 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 and lots of gore.
Well, it's not really. There's not like bloody gore. Just
yeah,
violent.
Yeah, just violent. Like,
violent.
A lot of point blank shots to the head.
And you know, Eric's got all these love interests. He's got like three or four girlfriends in this whole.
He's like a Bond type character.
Yeah.
Or.
He's just like a playboy, basically.
Yeah,
so you've got a little drama going on there, too. What caught my eye on this was because when I was at C2E2 last year, Gaska was there, and he signed the first three of the four issues. I guess they didn't have a fourth issue on him or whatever when I went to have him sign it, so I just got the first three signed. But and I talked to him briefly, and so that's it. I mean, that's the reason why I picked it up. I've read it twice now.
It was four issues?
Just four issues, but they're long issues.
Yeah, they're really long.
30-plus pages, I think. I'm not mistaken, per issue.
I guess overall, my overarching impression of it was that it was like a series of vignettes of what was going on Earth, the violent stuff that was going on, and then the life of this guy who's in charge of the whole operation because of some of his super wealth. And then ultimately, it begins/ends with the expedition into space, which is truly bizarre and rather short, I would think.
Right. Right, and you know, he is the main character. Eric is the main character. There's a lot of dialogue of him, like, basically talking to his dead grandmother in kind of like a journalistic form as everything is going on. There's some quotes in there, too, some literal quotes. I couldn't put it together. You could tell that the writer knew that, you know, there was a lot of things going on and it was kind of difficult to try to throw it all together. That's probably my biggest complaint about it is, sometimes the flow, albeit sometimes you could tell he was trying to make it abrupt. There were some segments of the story that I could have done without. And then other segments where I'm like, oh, they need to explain this more. You know, I need more content here.
Yeah.
So that's a dead giveaway to me that they may have crammed in a little too much into the story. They could have simplified it a little bit.
Yeah, like an extended edition.
Right.
Where there's like one extra minute.
Yeah, we need some deleted
stuff. Spread out all through the scenes. Right. Like, they were just short in a lot of them.
But it was one of those stories where I felt like sucked into the period that they were trying to present. You know, like I felt like I was like in this like weird, bizarre, futuristic.
Well, and it was, and my suspension of disbelief was they weren't too crazy. Like, it was all referencing sort of kind of mainstay science fiction.
Right, and yeah, and in the same note, it's not too far off of what could possibly happen in our own reality. You know, it was just, believe in global warming or not.
They talked about, you know, space elevators and some of the some of the flying ship type stuff seemed fairly plausible.
Right.
And they never got away. So it wasn't as crazy as the stories were and how random it was. The actual technology in the world was pretty consistent. Like, it was definitely a pretty static static character.
All right. Well, sounds like a pretty good series people need to check out. Yeah. That's Critical Millennium. It was from Arkea, four issues. Are they $3.99 a pop?
They're $3.95 a pop. It's a Critical Millennium Dark Frontier. I mean, it's obviously leading into something else, because it ends with, you know, saying this is the end of this chapter, and then it says mission start. So I'm expecting more to come. You know, I don't know if this is going to turn out to be some kind of bizarre Lost in Space or what, but, you know.
But it's definitely something you enjoyed and something you'll look forward to.
Well, you know, out of five stars, I'd probably give it like a 3, maybe 3.5, you know. Mm. I mean, I'm interested enough that I would pick up the next issue, yes.
Mm. But it's not a must-buy.
No, I think it's worth the price, and I think you'd enjoy reading it. Yeah.
It's a good-looking comic.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm fairly critical, so a 3, you know, that's a must-buy. Yeah.
Okay. All right, fair enough then. Well, that's going to do it for the time we have today for this episode of Comaholics Light. But, you know, something I realized is at the beginning of the show, we never did introduce ourselves. So I guess maybe we'll sign off by introducing ourselves. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Dirt in My Basement, talking via Skype to...
The Apocalypse here in Comaholics HQ, joined by my sidekick co-host...
Huckster, and I'm enjoying the Casa Apocalypto.
All right, guys, enjoy your drinks over there. I'm going to get out of my basement trying to warm up a little bit. But anyway, hey, new comic day. This show's going to go up Tuesday, so new comic day tomorrow. Everybody get excited.
All right.
All right, I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay. Cheers.
Bye.